remember where we were when Owen Hart had fallen from the ceiling of Kemper Arena, but our guest today was actually there. This happened right in front of him. Today's guest is Todd Surprise. That's his name, Surprise. It's not Surprise, it's Todd. Todd Surprise is actually his name. And he was in the third row in the Kemper Arena on May 23rd, 1999, when Owen Hart tragically fell to his death at the Over the Edge pay-per-view. Now, one thing's for sure is Owen Hart has become, you know, a bit of a somber topic when it comes to talking about his career. But Owen Hart himself was an absolute, you know, pioneer. He was someone that was wrestling ahead of his time. And sadly, it was tragically cut short. We hear the stories from, you know, the wrestlers talking about that night. And we've seen the publication from WWE. One thing we've never heard is from the fans themselves. So today, for the first time in my, anyway, in my recollection, we hear from Todd today of his experience of what happened that evening. And as always, we're joined today by J-Mac, co-host of the Jibber Jabber podcast.
Hello. Yeah, this is pretty much what I've done for a good chunk of this interview. As a non-wrestling fan, like, Kevin disagrees, but I think it was a little bit of a wallflower for the first half of the conversation, but then I started to find my groove. I've said it before. I think I've said it before in the podcast that although I'm not a wrestling fan, I do now have a kind of respect for what it is that I never had before. I'm too old to start getting into it. I've missed that boat, but I do have a respect for it. And I watched the Dark Side of the Ring, the final episode of season two, and it was about obviously the death of Owen Hart. And I was looking at the stuff that this guy was doing in the ring, and you can't help but be impressed by it. And it's such a shame that his life was kind of cut short the way it was. And kudos to you, Kevin, for finding Todd to talk about it. Well done.
Yeah, well, what actually happened was Dark Side of the Ring themselves, on their social media account and Facebook, they had basically put up the trailer for their final episode, and I'm like, whoa, this is going to be quite a somber one. It's going to be, you know, I was looking forward to it, not for the, you know what, the same as every other wrestling fan, we were looking forward to it because it's something that we're interested to know about, to hear more about, to see. So I looked in the comments section, and there was Todd basically saying, you know, I was there, third row, and he gave his recollection as to what happened. And I thought, you know, that's so interesting. We've never heard from a fan, especially one that was sitting in the third row. And he actually sent me across a picture as well. And it's, you can see him, there's a wee arrow pointing to it. You can find that on our social media. It's a wee arrow pointing to him. He's actually sitting there in the third row, and you can see Owen Hart in the ring. And it's a really sad, somber sight. But I thought, you know, I'm going to reach out to this guy, and if he's up for it, we'll chat about it on the podcast and give the wrestling portion of our listeners, you know, something to kind of, because right now, after they've watched that Dark Side of the Ring episode, they're going to still be in Owen Hart mode. I know I am. You can't not be. And I just thought, you know, this would be I keep using the word good, and it's something that I'm like, right, it's going to be a very interesting conversation.
He's a producer for the radio show, so he takes the incoming calls, and he pushes some buttons and makes the show what it is. it's a bit of a radio show producer is not something that's spoken about too often, but these guys can work some magic. But man, he can talk, and that's what we need on a show like this. There's nothing worse than having somebody on where you're constantly just trying to pull information out of them, like it starts to feel like an interrogation more than a conversation, and he definitely gave us a really good conversation. So, I had fun.
Yeah, I felt that that he went through my notes. It's like he could see my notes, like everything that we spoke of. I didn't even have to prompt him. You know, one thing I'll say is, you know, after 20 years, you know, he was right there, and you know, more power to him for being able to, you know, to kind of, he watched someone die in front of him, not someone, but Owen Hart. And then he just left that building, and that was it, you know? So it just speaks to his character that he managed to, you know, take that and still kind of live a semi-normal life, right?
Let's not piss about anymore. Let's just get the guy talking.
Before we play this conversation, make sure you guys go ahead and check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We'll also leave the links to Todd's radio show and to his social media in the description below, so you can go ahead and follow Todd, check out his radio show from Kansas. Huge thanks to Todd for coming on, and make sure to go ahead and like his radio show, social media, and tune in whenever you can. So before we go ahead and play this audio, I just want to play the announcement from JR and King at ringside as it happened, and then we'll go ahead and play the conversation.
Kansas City, tragedy befell the World Wrestling Federation and all of us. Owen Hart was set to make an entrance from the ceiling, and he fell from the ceiling. And I have the unfortunate responsibility to let everyone know that Owen Hart has died. Owen Hart has tragically died from that accident here tonight.
So joining us here today on the Jibber Jabber podcast in Kansas City himself, Todd Surprise. How are you doing, Todd?
Hey, guys. I appreciate it. Pretty good. How are you guys doing today?
Ah, not bad. As we discussed before we hit record, J-Mac actually got the time zone incorrect, so we stood you up a little bit, Todd. Sorry about that.
it's all good, man. I had notes here ready to roll, and I've been sitting there playing my guitar and painting my guitar room here, and so I thought I'd throw up some signs for you to look at in case you want to see something there. But yeah, man, I appreciate it, guys.
Oh, that's great.
That's two times I've fucked up the time. No, that's terrible. Hey, we did it with, it was a girl that was in The Mandalorian. We had her on 2 weeks ago, Misty Rosas, and I screwed up the time again. So this just seems to be my thing.
It's so all good in the hood, man.
Next time I'll do the time keeping aging.
if I didn't Google search it, I wouldn't know myself, my friends. So don't worry about it.
Perfect. So for everyone at home listening, so Todd, you were actually there the night that Owen Hart fell from the top of the Kemper Arena. But before we kind of get into the, you know, the somber side, you know, as a wrestling fan, I must ask you, what started it for you? Where did your wrestling fandom begin?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. My dad turned me on to wrestling in Kansas City here. We had a show, a weekly show on Sunday mornings. And what they would do, they'd film this show in Kansas City on Thursday nights, open to the public. It was a live event. And they'd film that, and then they'd just replay that event on Sunday morning. And so Sunday mornings, you'd wake up, you get your bowl of cereal, and you sit down. And after the preachers got done doing their Sunday morning preaching on the TV show, the wrestling came on, you know. And, man, I became a fan. I was probably 6 years old when I was watching that at the time. And I was born in 68. So you're looking, you know, we're talking early 70s, man, when this time. So you're looking at guys like Hulk Hogan. I mean, Andre the Giant, Bruiser Brody.
Yeah.
These guys are coming to town. You know, on the local scene, Harley Race was our champion here in Kansas City. So I saw Harley Race fight so many times in Kansas City. I couldn't tell you how many times that. And it was a place down in Kansas City called Memorial Hall. And, actually, on the Kansas City, Kansas side of this, and I'm on the Kansas side. A lot of people don't know Kansas City, Missouri. There's a Kansas City, Missouri, and a Kansas City, Kansas. We just kind of lump each other all together because we're so close together. So this arena where Owen passed and the arena that I grew up on is actually on the Kansas City, Kansas side of the state line, but it's less than a half a mile to the Missouri side. So when an event like this, you're going to draw from, since we are a two-state thing, we draw from both sides really well, regardless of what it was. So even back in the day when I was a little kid, man, this little arena only held maybe 5,000 seats, but it was sold out. And on Sunday morning, that looked cool. So my dad turned me on to that, and we'd go, I think I probably saw 50 matches as a youngster. You know, that's a lot of years. You know, going, my dad worked out of town, so I went to a lot of matches when he'd come back in town and would take me to those things. So hell, all the way up until I started driving. I went to matches with my dad, and then once I got a car and was going, I was going to all the matches. So that'd be from the 80s up until present, you know. That's
wow.
So any match that came to Kansas City, I had a ticket at. It was rare that I missed an event. Now, this was, you only had the three events, you know, once it got big. You had WCW, we had a local thing, and then you had WWF at the time rolling through. And WWF never put on anything other than a house show here in Kansas City. WCW dabbled in a few things and a couple TV tapings, but we had a TV taping later on, and then I think that's when they turned on. They said, hey, I think this place would do very well for a new event. And if you remember, the Over the Edge was the very first event that WWF had came back with after they stopped doing these in-your-house shows. This was like they were doing these kind of shows in between their big shows. And this was their very first new, quote, new pay-per-view that they hadn't had. This was their rollout thing, you know. And and so... And they debuted this in Kansas City. So I think just on the TV show tapings and the house matches, they thought Kansas City would be a great place for it. So that's, I really think that's why that was actually presented as a live pay-per-view event right there.
Yeah. And so the pay-per-view itself, I mean, when you take away the tragedy of Owen Hart, the pay-per-view itself wasn't actually that bad. It was actually a really good pay-per-view. Would you agree?
Yeah, and you know, when we, let me put my glass back on because I jotted down, but yeah, you know what's strange about that is, you know, during that time, Stone Cold, man, huge, you know, we're talking, this is Attitude Era.
Yeah, that's the night he got screwed over by Shane McMahon and The Undertaker.
Yeah, and if, when you go back and you watch maybe the couple Monday Night Raws going into this pay-per-view, if you can kind of dig up some of the highlights, you can kind of see, but the match, it was kind of a strange, there were some strange matches that were kind of weird, but I tell you, the one that they'd really build big back then, besides the two big matches at the end, was Road Dogg versus Billy Gunn. Because that was their first match that they'd built up to the big, you know, brawl after they'd been such successful tag team together. So this was their first big match, and to be honest with you, I'm looking at that match on the, I don't even remember that match because where it took place after the tragedy of everything had happened, I barely remember that match.
That was like the match right after, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've got that jotted down here and I pulled it up and I believe so. And like I told my wife, I don't remember a lot of this stuff that happened. So the match, it was X-Pac and Kane match. They had that with the D-Lo and Mark Henry.
Yeah.
And that, so, but what people, a lot of people don't remember though, there were some house matches, WWE Sunday Night Heat. And so there were three house matches on in Kansas City before that.
Well, did you get to watch that as well?
I was there very early. I got to all these places very early. and this was Attitude Era. I was going to these matches. I grew up, when I went in the 80s, I was one of those guys that was up in wrestlers' faces back in the day, and you yelled and screamed, and they'd yell back, and they knew, you know, you didn't step over the line, but they loved seeing those guys because that's pop for those guys. And I had a couple of friends, and we loved that, and that's what we loved about wrestling. You know, it was in my 20s and teens, it was awesome. So I can remember going there, and that was part of my love. It was really ribbing the wrestlers, the bad guys, and you know, at home, I ribbed the good guys. I didn't like the Hogans and stuff. I liked the bad guys. But when you're there to get that going, that's what it's all about. So, yeah, those first three matches that they had there that night, I remember them. Everything was really building up, man. It was going to be a really cool night that night. And like you said about the matches, there was some great matches that night. Mm-hmm. And we were looking forward to a lot of, man. There was a hardcore match. We had some really big names. You go through the whole list, there were some big names. So, yeah, anticipation for that night was really building. And I just remember, if you go back and look at some of that video, I brought signs myself, you know, but I couldn't. And I was 30 years old. I think back, that's kind of, you know. But, man, if you look at that place, you couldn't see some of the people in the crowd because there were so many signs, man. Yeah. It was just crazy. And we spent weeks building stuff up to get, you know, there. But, yeah, man, the anticipation for that show from that Sunday Night Heat all the way to the very last show on there, which would have been the Stone Cold, you know, fiasco with everything.
Yeah,
it was a great show.
Yeah. Well, so
do you think that the fact that you can't remember that match you were just talking about, do you think that what you seen that night did have some kind of traumatic effect on you? Oh,
most definitely. Most definitely, man. When it had, so I'll take you, you know, so a lot from that match on, it took until I'm going to say it was, I'm trying to remember who that match was. Test, Mankind, the Union. That was the very first match I kind of can remember in my head. So I missed the Nicole Bass, Val Midas. I remember a little bit about that. That was the very next match, you know, because Deborah and Jeff Jarrett were in the gorilla position when they brought Owen by him, you know, when everything was going on. So that was the very next match. And so in my memory, some of that stuff just got blocked out. I mean, it was a crazy event. When it happened, like I said, when we start talking about what happened, it's pretty amazing, like, when it happened, like, how it all, and I can imagine a lot of people don't remember this, to be honest with you, that was there. A few people kind of have some sketchy, only thing I can remember from what I kind of wrote down when it happened that night, I was kind of a stickler for kind of trying to remember things or write things down, so I wrote something down a couple days later, not the whole thing, but I went back and read through some of the stuff, and I don't remember a couple of those matches, man. And I was third row. It wasn't like I was up in the rafters where you can kind of get complacent and stuff. I was down there where it was at. And
yeah, that's right.
I was seeing the photo earlier on that you sent, Kevin.
That photo, like I said, I saw that a couple of days, you know, after, I don't know, the internet. I've been searching once the internet had kind of gotten big and Google was, and I found that photo and I kind of thought, man, this is where I was at. And you have to remember, guys, there wasn't a cell phone in the house. That wasn't even, you know, people had some in their cars that were bolted in their cars and stuff, but nobody had, there was no, so the only footage you got, I mean, I knew some guys that snuck some 35mm, they're film cameras, and these are just they'd be like what you see your disposable cameras kind of look like now.
Yeah.
But just a plastic housing, and you would sneak those into concerts and these WWE, and that way if they took them, you're only out $30, you know, or whatever, and may get kicked out. But I was so close, I was afraid to bring in a camera because I was so close. And I'd brought them in before. I've got pictures of Flair and Vader fighting Ken Shamrock, a lot of these, you know, back in the day. And it was, and then eventually you could bring your camera, and they didn't kind of give you any trouble. But back then, I didn't bring it. So there was no photos, guys, back then. I mean, everything you see and all these silly YouTube videos, that's another thing. You see these videos, they all say, oh, and this. They're putting that on there so they can get clicks. You know it as well as I know how the clicking business
works. In reality, it's New Jack throwing someone near death.
and they'll show videos of him wrestling in the mat. And yeah, man, that's him falling. I guess you're not lying about it, but to answer your question, yeah, man, I did. I really did block out probably the first. I was probably still stunned because they had a 15-minute break, you know, after that happened. That's along with the time when everything was going on. So there was we had a good half hour of no wrestling, you know. So when it picked back up, I still kind of don't remember much of those two matches, to be honest with you.
God, so you're sitting in the third row. And so at this point, there's the Blue Blazer promo on the screen, which I'm right in thinking this is as it was reported that the Blue Blazer promo would play on the big screen, so the arena kind of went dark. So at this point, I imagine you're looking to your top left, which means the ring and the position to where Owen fell would have been to your 1 o'clock.
Yes, that's right, man.
Can you kind of just walk us through what you do remember that happened?
Yeah. So the match right before it was a hardcore match. And back then, hardcore matches were hardcore, man. They wasn't. There were table pieces and chairs and kendo sticks. You know, Matt Steve Blackman, he used kendo stick a lot. There was parts of stuff. And what I remember is, I think that they had this promo set up because you need Owen to be able to get into play. He's already been in place. He'd been up there for quite a while, dressed as some kind of maintenance to get him up there and in this walkway. There was a couple rigging guys, a couple cameramen, or not cameramen, lighting guys. Kemp Arena had some lights from up there too that you could walk and work from up there. And then maintenance to the scoreboard was up there. Well, what I remember is the hardcore match, there was a lot of crap in the ring. They were kicking shit out of the ring just left and right. I mean, and if you watch that, what's the referee, Jimmy Correll or
Cordes?
They're him. So he talks about how he was kicking stuff out. And I remember that. They were kicking stuff out of the ring, and they were showing this entry on this interview. And we didn't, you can't hear what Jim Ross is saying. So you're just, you're kind of on your own when you're in these events. You don't, they don't really tell you much of anything. You're watching that Jumbotron and they're doing that silly thing, you know, where they do with Owen and he's kind of being spoofy about stuff. And the arena is completely dark. And that's obviously, they're looking, having you look one way so that you're not, you know, sleight of hand. So you're not seeing what's going on up here,
yeah,
getting ready to drop. And, I remember him kicking stuff out, and then the loudest crash. I mean, back then I didn't have any in the industry. I wasn't working in any type of entertainment industry or anything. But the only thing I can describe it now as, it sounded like a speaker that was plugged in, or a microphone that had dropped, that was plugged in, and it was just so loud. And I know they mic the rings, you know, for slams and stuff, mm-hmm, to make, and I'm sure that had something to do to it, but it was such a loud, and the out of the corner of my eye, like you see something, just like a car that you would see going by real fast on the road, you've seen it, but you didn't see it, but I saw a flash, and then the bang, and then when we turned around, it was confusing, because you didn't, everything's still really dark, and you were kind of like looking to figure out what, and then you saw Owen, you know, there. And that was when you thought, well, that's weird, man. That's, what's he doing there? Because this isn't, you know, you didn't know he was being lowered in. They didn't tell us that was what he was going to do.
Yeah.
We didn't even know that. But he's laying there, and I remember him setting, he'd land, apparently he'd hit his head, chest on the turnbuckle in the corner. And flop, and it came back, and he tried to set up. That was the first, that's my first image now, because I'm looking at him, and I'm starting to gather in what's going on, and a lot of people are still looking. Nobody's holding any signs up, because it's dark, nobody's on TV yet. And you could see him try to set up, like a half a setup.
Wow.
And then he comes back down. Now, of course, he's got the mask on, so you can't see any expressions in his face or anything, but he collapsed. And then when he collapsed, I thought that's not good there. Like, and I didn't understand. I still hadn't put together that he'd fallen from such a great distance yet.
Yeah,
you didn't get that yet. Guys come out from under the ring all the time in the dark. There's holes cut. You know, you don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But that boom and the amount of dust. I mean, I work with car racing now, and the amount of dust that came out from under the ring. That was probably embedded into that ring in the wood and the plywood and the padding. It was something that was the first thing. That's the thing that I remember most vividly, even to this day, you know, was the amount of, it was just a boom and a dust. And I was just, and that's what was strange in your head. Like, what was that?
You know? So even with a number of slams and hits that the ring takes, all that dust was still sitting in there. So it took never a slam. Even, so hard to release it. That's scary.
That's how I can describe the impact. It had to have been just unbelievable to see that. I've been in wrestling for a long time. You've even seen them where they rigged ring. You know, this was, and I was so close. Like you said, you could see the dust particles still in the lighting. And I just thought, oh my gosh, that was a very impactful, whatever it was. Whatever that was hard hit. And then when you put two and two together, like, holy crap, that was, I think he fell from somewhere. And then you realize he's got that harness on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when my head.
Did you ever have a moment where you thought that it was maybe part of the show? Or did you know right away that it was?
Here's what was strange, man, because it was so loud and everything was so dark and they were still doing that video that it just seems out of character of any wrestling event I'd ever been at, right? It could have been like they could have tried doing something that, and it might have. My first thought was he fell from a 20 feet, you know, like he descended down and then he had been hurt. That was my first thought. But when I saw him try to set up, I was like, man, that just doesn't look right. And then the moment I'm so close, the moment he pulled the mask off, the arena was kind of dark. Then they kind of went with house lights or whatever it was. I don't know what, but when they pulled his mask, you know, so before we get to that, Jerry the King Lawler, that's the thing I remember the second, him sprinting from his announce position to the other side of the ring and slid in halfway, kind of a deal like they do, you know, and he kind of looked, and he pushed himself back, and then he climbed up in the ring again, and he was helping the referee, and there were some other people in there, and they were the guys, I think, helping clearing that ring out from the previous match. And all I remember is the King kind of, he wasn't running like crazy around, but he ran in, back out, back in, and then back to the position, and then back in the ring again.
Yeah.
Before he came back and made the announcement, you know, not before he even announced he passed, you know, like, hey, this isn't part of the show and that kind of thing. So people in the crowd, if you go back and listen to that announcement, there's some people that think this is still part of it because you don't know, man. And it's a huge arena. This place was sold out, man. Mm. It was packed. And the show was, this was when it was starting to get good. This was part of the meat of the show, right? Like the first couple matches were good with Kane and X-Pac and X-Pac and Al Snow and Head and stuff. But we were starting to get in, and this was going to be the last kind of gimmick, kind of not gimmick, but kind of, you know, one of those early matches to get to the meat of this lineup. And so it wasn't like it wasn't an anticipated match, guys. You know, like a lot of it, this was just another match in there. It was the Godfather. He'd do his thing and the Owen would do his thing and somebody would fall down. You know, it was just one of those deals. And so it wasn't like we were all anticipating. It wasn't like it was a build big up for, it wasn't built up to that match. That wasn't the main match of the night, you know. So, like I said, when it happened, it was such a strange, everything that was going on right there at the time that I just, like I said, the King, he stood out in my mind that I knew something wasn't right. Because this
what
isn't,
was, what was the
announcer
case
doesn't like? Bounce back and forth like that, you know.
Yeah. Did you see, was the King's face any indication
as
to what was going on? Yeah.
Most definitely. It was, you could just tell, man, when he walked, the first time he ran back, and I don't know what he ran back for, but when he came back the second time, his face, just like everybody talked about, it was ash and white, and he had that look of like, what do we do? Like, what do, because to be honest, this is, at this point, they're bagging, they're using the bagger on him. And doing compressions, right? Well, now that we know that he died of the aorta probably being separated, those chest compressions were just pushing blood out of, you know, he was just inside of him. He was just, the CPR wasn't going to help. You know, he needed, and they got into the hospital as fast. It wasn't like it was, they stuck around and did it here. It was, they were on him as they were carrying him out.
Mm-hmm. So what I can imagine is, you know, for a couple minutes that may have felt to you guys like you're standing watching that for an hour, may have only been a couple of minutes. What was the general feeling from the people around you? Was there whispers and people saying, you know, what's going on? I take it at this point you all become one collective. You know, what's going on? I hope he's safe. Could you tell us a bit about what that feeling was like?
Yeah. So I was there, and like I said before, I love to go to these matches, and man, I'll drop a few. I don't get crazy, but man, I like to yell. Is that, and right next to me that night was a dad with his four kids, and we're talking young kids. And so my, like I said, I was kind of bummed, man, because I'm not one of those jerk guys who's gonna act a fool all night next to a kid. I mean, I have that much decency, so I toned it down a little bit. But I paid a lot of money for these tickets, you know, so everybody on the lower area, man, was really pumped for this thing, man. And when it happened, because these kids don't know, you know, they know what they see on TV, man, and that's all they know. But when it happened, you know, they're still all kind of in there, and they're asking dad what's going on. And I turned to dad right when I saw the real paramedics. You know what real paramedics look like.
Yeah.
They got more stuff on their belts and stuff. And a lot of them are carrying real equipment.
Don't look like indie wrestlers.
Yeah. It's just a different look. And that's when I, you know, when you seen, and this is before you saw the X thing that they give you when something's hurt. I don't remember anybody giving that, because I think they all knew, oh my God, this is an ex, this they knew for sure this was messed up. But I turned to the kid, the dad, and I told him, hey, you need to get your kids taken to the concession stand or the t-shirt, because this isn't part of the show, man, and this is real, and this is not, you know. My wife was a doctor or a nurse at that time, and I've been to CPR training, and that there's a difference when you pretend to CPR train and when you're pushing a chest down to save a man's life, you know, and bagging it, that's different. So I told him, hey, you need to take your kids, because this isn't something, we're talking 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, and there's four of them, and they were all brothers. different age groups. So I said, you got to get these kids out of here because you don't want to see this, man. And if not, just at least entertain them with something else. So the people around us, there was a couple adults right behind me, and they were, the lady was really, you could tell it was bothering her. Like, she knew that something was really bad, you know, and I was still processing it, but you're in a gate, your mouth's a gap, you know, you're sitting there, mouth open, and you're just trying to soak in, like, it's a car wreck, and you're trying, now you're trying to describe the car wreck in your mind, what just happened, and, but the people around us, there's still people, the upper deck is cheering loud, you know, still, and you hear yelps and stuff, because it's a packed arena, and we've been sitting there a long time before that match, you know, waiting for the, and then this had happened, and I think some people didn't get it. That it wasn't part of the show, but I think the people down below knew, the lower unit knew. So you're talking maybe 500 to 1,000 people out of 17,000, 19,000 people that knew for real. So you're going to hear some things. You know, a lot of people didn't know. They just assumed this was part of the show, man.
Yeah, and they didn't, and there was no like announcement from anybody to tell you guys in the arena.
This is one of the main reasons, and I'm glad you brought that. This is one of the main reasons I wanted to do this podcast. I've looked at tons of videos and stuff, and nobody's ever, and I've looked in comments for hours, and nobody's ever said this other than a few guys here and there. Not once, and I'll repeat, not once did they make the announcement to the attendants, people in house, that Owen Hart had died.
Wow. Do you think maybe that was because, I mean, and you can answer this question. Uh-huh. Had Howard Finkel came out with his microphone and said, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Owen Hart has passed away, do you think maybe that would, a lot of you would have left? It would have maybe broke out into hysterics, do you know? Do you think maybe they tried to save the audience with the rest of the show? Or do you think maybe they just really didn't know what to do in this kind of scenario?
I honestly think they didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I think all this, going back and listening to some of JR's comments on his podcast that he talked about, how they didn't even announce to him that Owen had died, and they said, hey, yeah, he died, and we're back to you in 10, 9, 8, you know, in the business, man. That's how do you come up with, you know, I'm talking to you guys, we're just chatting, but how do you make an announcement like that to everybody on TV like that? So they were saying something. I remember them. At one point, I don't remember what point in the show this had happened. It may have been in those two matches that I can't really remember. But I do remember them, because I'm watching the King, and they're different now. Everything's different, right? The lighting guys are different. The guys who give you the cues when commercials are going to be wrapped up are different. Everybody has a different demeanor on their face at this point, right? Everything looks different. So in me, I was 31 at the, you know, I'm 30. I was 30 at the time. I kind of knew that something wasn't right. The adults kind of knew something wasn't right. The drunk people obviously probably didn't even care what was at the time, because they didn't know it was the significance of what was going on, man. You know, is that, and the parents, all the conversations I've heard from people say they just remember all of what the events, but I don't think nobody's ever came out and said, hey, you know, they never told us. And so I feel bad. Here in Kansas, you know, sometimes people were like, man, you guys are really cold-hearted, and some of the wrestlers, man, and I'm one of them, man, they didn't tell us, man, but I was hard on China when she came out, man. I was ribbing her hard, because she's a manager, she's standing outside the ring, right, standing out there. She'd been out twice, she'd been in at X-Pac earlier hanging out with it, and then she was back later on with
Triple H, he was fighting The Rock.
Yeah. I'm berating her, right, and she doesn't have that look like she wants to kill you look. Instead, now she's got that tearful in her eye look, you know. And so, man, like I said, I'm as guilty as everybody else, but they never once, and like I said, I repeat, they never once told us in Kansas City, in the building, hey, he has passed. And like I said, I honestly believe some people would have left. No chance of any type of, like, some people say, oh, they would have rioted and stuff. There's no chance. You know, Kansas City is not that, you know, most towns aren't like that anyway. But they would understand if you came in and said, hey, we had a tragic accident, man. Things happen. We've all been at places where something's happened and they've had to. And I understood the other way, man. This guy's got a pay-per-view going on. Things are going on. There's a clock that's ticking down. Back then, you have a time limit that you're paying for on pay-per-views. You go over a certain time limit, that's a big chunk of money.
Yeah.
So in his head, he's just trying to figure out what to do, I'm sure, and everybody's scrambling. So, yeah, I honestly don't think it was a conscious decision. Hey, man, let's just go ahead. Show must go on. We got to roll and let's just keep
going. Yeah, I mean, there are that has been the big debate, you know, should the show have stopped or should it continue as it did? But you see, when you look at it from a crime scene standpoint, they should have had that stopped. Like, legally, they should have had that, right? So, I mean, at that point, it's like, right, well, we know the answer. The answer is that show should have stopped. But here's another question for you, okay? If they had come out and said, you know, sadly, Owen Hart has passed away, it is now our responsibility to end this show. Do you think there would have been thousands of people maybe taking a different, you know, a different view on that and getting angry?
Most definitely. Like you said, I've been at events where things get canceled because of rain. in the business, and they get people are mad, you know. Yeah. So I mean, I understand there. Your people are going to walk away from it. So yeah, he's got 17,000 attendance, and you know you're going to have some people that are mad. You're going to have some people. It's really hard to make that call, man. I can see it both ways. I don't fault, even to this day, I don't fault the guy for keep going to this thing go on, but knowing that it was a crime scene, you know, like you have to treat it just like the car wreck at the end of the street. When they come out and, you know, if it's a major car wreck and something happens like that and it's a crime scene, I'm sorry it's your road or sorry that, you know, whatever it is, your driveway, but we have to use it as a crime scene until we figure out what happened, guys. I mean, but no, man, that's what kept the people in the crowd, I think. We didn't know how bad it was, man.
Yeah, especially if they're not stopping the show, right? Yeah, you would assume.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. So what happened, like there was a break, that 15-minute break, guys. I went up. There's a bank of phones in Kemper Arena in different places, man. You could use payphones, you know, and, you know, a lot of young guys may be like, what's a payphone? So you put money in an actual thing and you dial up. And if it was out of state, you had to put more money in the thing. So, but I called my wife and said, hey, Owen just fell. You know, something happened. I don't know how far he fell. I don't know what happened. Have you heard anything on TV? And she said, no, there's nothing going on. I said, turn it on the local news and see if they flipped on. It wasn't even close to being the local news time yet, but I thought we got people. It was such a big event. We had Kansas City media in the house, but what happens in the, and now looking back, what happens in the media, you know, in print media and audio, they come in, they stay for a few matches and then they get the hell out of there and they get their story in, man. So the print media was gone. Going back, there was three guys that were actual media guys that stuck around, and they have some pretty, and I've tried to get a hold of a couple of them, and they're not in Kansas City no more. They've got some pretty interesting things because they were actually writing stuff down like a reporter would. Wow. So their memory's probably even better, and I'm sure they've got, but they've moved on probably, and this is just a blip on their radar of what they did, you know, their time in Kansas City. But like I said, guys, it was such a weird, at that time when that happened, man, it was really strange, man. Just really weird turn of events.
How long did it take for the shadow of this incident to dissipate? I mean, surely something like this you would think would hang over like a looming dark cloud for quite a long time over the wrestling industry. Do you remember how long that lasted?
For me personally, man?
Yeah, dude,
Man, I was a rabid fan, dude, up and from tiny little kid where I would wrestle my brother on the bed and choke slam him and beat him to death, you know, as a little kid, seven and, you know, at 9 years old. And I quit going to matches, man, for probably two full years. And other than, the immediate fallout of what happened and the tributes that went on and a couple, you know, I kind of turned it off, and it wasn't like a planned thing, and it wasn't like I said I'm done with it. My wife describes it more. I was in shock, guys. I was in shock probably when I called my wife from those phones. She knew something was wrong. We've been together forever, since high school, and at this point, you know, so she knew that something was wrong. Like, she goes, well, what happened? And I said it was bad, and so I said, I'll call you back. So then she paged me. I remember that. So she paged me back, and I remember seeing her number. So I went back and called, and she says, hey, they said they're going to have some reports from on the news tonight. And I was like, yeah, something happened, but they ain't touched. She goes, is the thing still going on? And, I said, yeah. She said, CNN's talking about, and this is CNN's, this we're talking early infancy, we're 99. There's not a lot of news. This isn't like what you see now, man. And she said, CNN's got a thing saying something about it on the bottom. So, like you said, to answer your question, dude, I blocked out wrestling for a long time, and I'm sure it was because of this shock thing. You know, I just was kind of like, man, it freaked me out enough to where I was close enough. I mean, the sound that you heard, the sounds of the guys working on him, you know, the belts rustling and stuff, you know, that kind of stuff. That's real, man. It was real, dude. That wasn't like what you hear on TV or you see on a monitor, man. And I'm sure that's why when you hear the King talk or the Jim Ross, he says a lot of times the stuff that he's describing is stuff that he's seen on the, you know, what he's remembering is a lot of things that he's just seen over and over and over, man. It's hard to really remember everything that happened as it happened, but some things do get burned into your image. Like some of those guys said, man, they remember everything. And I don't remember a couple matches, and I kind of quit watching wrestling for a couple years after that. And I do remember I went back to a match in Oklahoma. My friend lives in Tulsa, and I drove to Tulsa, spent the night, and went to a Monday Night Raw in Oklahoma City. It was one of my first big matches back. They didn't come back to Kansas City for a while for obvious reasons. A lot of open investigations and WCW, you know, they did a tribute match in Kansas City with Benoit and Bret Hart.
Okay.
Major, and you can look that up. They did like a actual wrestling, you know, it was all it was a real match, but I mean it was all moves, it was all shaking hands, you know, back when you'd have two good guys wrestling the other type of thing. But it was one of those things to put on a match for that. And I can't remember if that was how many weeks after that. I think Nitro was booked not much longer after this event, to be honest with you, because I think I was going to be going to the Nitro event, and I just kind of quit going to matches for at least 9 months for sure. I kind of just quit watching. After maybe 3 weeks after the event, I watched all the Monday Night Raws and Nitros and anything, you know, your Sunday Night Heats, all that, just so you kind of get an update on what's kind of going on. But then after that, I kind of tailed off, you know. And as a matter of fact, I had the tape, you know, I've got the VCR tape, never once even popped it in, but until much later. And I was like, oh wow, I got that, because I taped it too. I wanted to see what it was like, you know, watching it on TV wise as well. So yeah,
how do you feel talking about it just now?
It's really like going to a therapist kind of thing, man. You know, when you talk to, I've talked to my wife, I've talked to her about it, I've talked to a few friends and a couple wrestling friends, but we're talking, man, I told back maybe when it happened at my work, we talked a lot. We had a lot of wrestling fans, but man, we're still talking maybe 6 or 7 people, guys talking around. So, you know, we're talking less than 20 people I've even told the story to, other than mentioning something on Facebook, you know. And then,
it's about 23 now based on one listener.
Oh, yeah.
And like I said, we maybe have 10 more. I got some of my family ready to roll in, man. So you'll gain some listeners tonight. But
we genuinely have more than one listener. He's just been a joke.
But yeah, man, it's a strange deal, man. You don't hear a lot of people talk about being in the arena, because I think it was a lot of young kids. I mean, you guys are younger than I am, obviously, and I think there was a lot of kids in the age group between 13 or maybe even 12 and 10, all the way up to teenagers. And man, that's a long years back. It's hard to kind of remember. Now you'll remember things, and you'll remember I was there, and people will, but like some of the stuff I remember, man, were the sights and sounds. Like I said, them throwing the stuff into the ring to get him ready. When they're bagging someone, that makes that noise, you know, with that cruncher. And it just, there's just certain things that you remember, you know, and I just thought, man, this is significant. Something big just happened, and yeah, it was bad.
God, I mean, if that happened today in today's society, I mean, if someone was to fall from that and the audience was to see that, I think WWE would reach out to the audience and kind of offer them some kind of support afterwards. You guys, you left that building that night, and that was it.
I walked out of that place, I'd walked out of that arena a million times. I've seen 1,000 concerts there, man. I've seen Harlem Globetrotters as a young kid, you know, there. I've seen monster truck shows there, tennis matches, everything. I've seen everything there, not just wrestling. And walked out of that place feeling different than any other time. Sometimes you'd walk out of there upset how the concert was kind of crappy or a bad experience and stuff, but never walking out of there with everybody with that. Like I said, the night went on, you know, and as the night went on, the big matches with The Rock, I mean, that match was a huge match. Stone Cold's match, that was a huge match. And the people in the arena were kind of getting back into it, man. I mean, yeah. And we didn't know it. You know, we didn't know. And so The crowd was really getting back into it by the last two matches, because this is who you paid to see, man. I mean, you paid to see The Rock fight. You paid and Triple H and that whole thing that was going on. And then the Stone Cold. I mean, I'd seen Stone Cold a ton of times with WCW when he was there before he was Stone Cold. And I've seen him a ton of times after. And he's the reason why you're there. The Rock and the Stone Cold and the Undertaker, those are the guy, and Triple H, that's who you're there to see. So after this happened, we knew something was bad, man. I think in our heads, we were just hoping that everything was all right. Like, he's messed up, and we don't know what's going to happen, and that's why you keep going, right? So we were just kind of like trying to get back into it, but man, the wrestlers, guys, like, that's the one thing that, and I don't, nobody else kind of describes, because you only see the few things, but like Deborah, I can remember she's crying.
Yeah.
When she came down to her match. That was the first match after it happened. She's got tears in her eyes. Jeff Jarrett wasn't J-E-F-F Jeff Jarrett, man. I do remember Val Venus being in character, and now looking back at it thinking, man, that was a strong match that he put on, because he was able to actually block out that just like The Rock. And that's why I think Val Venus probably should have been a bigger push than he was. I mean, I'm just gimmick is kind of goofy, but professional wise, it was a top notch match. His stuff, he blocked everything out and just put the show on. They're like, all right, if they're going to make us do it, I'm not deviating from what happened. This is what we practiced. We're going to do it.
Yeah.
And he still did all of his stuff, like everything. So in our heads, man, we were like, oh, we breathed a little bit.
Yeah.
People got their food again and people were kind of getting into it and we were screaming and more beers were flowing.
In a way, Vince McMahon kind of, by keeping the show going, that was your kind of therapy. You know what I mean?
It was, dude.
Right? I suppose you could look at it that way. It's not something that we've ever been able to look at it that way, really.
Like I can understand if they said, hey, man, he died. Then your therapy, you know, you would be looking at the rest of the night. And so I can see where people would go, hey, man, he did that for a reason. Because the house, you got to make sure the house still looks good on these events. But I don't think that was really it. And like you said, I honestly think, you know, like you said, everybody was, the heat was building back up. And all I can say is when the Triple H music hit and they came out, you know, it was a big pop, man. And the signs, and to go back to when he fell, people don't know this about Kemp Arena. In 1979, Kemp Arena, the ceiling collapsed on Kemp Arena.
What?
Go back and look at it on 1979, big rainstorm came in, and they were supposed to have the Republican National Convention here in Kansas City that coming up for 1980 that year. Big rains came in, some faulty construction, nobody was hurt. But if you do a Google search and type in Kemp Arena ceiling roof collapse, not the ceiling. This ain't the ceiling. I'm not talking about the ceiling, guy. I'm talking about the whole freaking roof. You can see the sky from inside. So in my head, like, I was a young man when that happened. That was 79. I was all but 10 or 11 years, 9 years old. I was 9 years old. So I don't really remember when Kemper. I just knew that it had happened, right? So when that boom happened, my thought was, I wonder if a ceiling tile fell or something again. Because, you know, everything went back up. But they changed the inside of Kemper a little bit. They got rid of a lot of the ceiling tiles and left a lot of the open rafters exposed and stuff, and walkways and stuff. But that was my first thought was, holy crap, man, I think something just for Kemper, you know, in my head. And nobody, you know, nobody would – I've never heard nobody even say that that was the first thing they thought of. But yes, Kipp Arena in 79, yeah, the roof did collapse due to a big rain and some faulty construction. So it was rebuilt and to what it was, you know, at that point.
Well, so yeah, that's...
I'm looking at that right now. It's quite an image.
Is that... Yeah. It says 80 feet high, is it? Or is it...
Yeah, so you're probably looking... And if you understand how Kipper is built, if I showed like that picture I sent you on the outside, that structure on the outside, that holds the majority of the, so that way there's not that many pillars or structures on the inside. That was a type of construction that was outer structural instead of inner. So, the inside dude's about eight, I'd say maybe to the complete roof, if you're maybe it'd be 85, but the walkway was a 70-foot walk, you know, 70 feet walkway, you know, with 10 feet probably between you and the roof.
And as the final episode there of The Dark Side of the Ring, kind of, we actually got to see the clip that held Owen Hart. And did that not just make you freeze and be like, wow, that's a key ring. That is literally a key ring.
When I watched that, like I said, nothing really bothered me on that thing. I mean, it was more like I'm just trying to figure out what happened and learn it. And I knew there wasn't going to be any. I knew there was no footage going to be shown.
Oh yeah, of course.
Knew there was no going to be photos. Were going to be rare. Only thing that you could find. But wow, when she took those kids up there and looked over that, I don't know if I could have done that, man. To be honest with you, I mean, maybe she thought eventually that place is going to be torn down and I need to have this closed now. But man, dude, that part of the show, that got me hard, you know, other than the Owen videos of the home stuff, you know, that's as a father, that always, you know, I got two kids of my own, so that's tough, man. And so, but no, man, to know that she went up in that and stood there on that platform, man, I've been in that arena a million times, guys, and that's way up there, man. It's way up there. It looks farther than 80. You know, when you're a person just trying to describe, if I was to say it, I thought I'd have said it was over 100 feet, you know, back.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just by a person standing down on the underneath it. But 70 feet platform, 80 feet high, you know, is probably what the building stands.
Kevin, I'm going to ask you the question. Obviously, Todd said that part of the documentary got him. What part got you?
For me, it was when his daughter said, for such little memories she had of him. That was just tough because as much as he'd established a relationship with his son, Oge, his daughter, like, he was only just getting to know her because he was on the road a lot of the time. She's just a new baby. You know, they've got one memory together. That's just kills your soul. And the worst part about it is that Owen Hart wasn't like every other wrestler. He was in the wrestling business for his family so that he could retire and be with his family. And everything that he fought hard and sacrificed for, he lost it all, and that's the part that really fucked with me.
I'm gonna say that's tough. I have a daughter and a son, man, and I had a battle with, you know, not to get all crazy personal, but I had a cancer battle when my son was, for myself, I was, my son was 4 years old, and I didn't know if I, you know, there was a time that we didn't know I was gonna pull through anything, you know, some of the same things I kind of thought was like, man, you know, this poor kid, man, he ain't going to remember anything. You know, that daughter's not going to remember anything of this guy. The only thing she's going to remember is what people tell her, you know, that's how it works.
Yeah.
You don't remember things. Like, my mom's has been gone, you know, a good 12 years or 10, but I remember my stuff, but you start remembering things that people tell you too, you know, and same way with your grandparents. That's how your brain works. You remember things that people kind of tell you, and that poor girl, you know, she won't know, you know, and in a way it doesn't hurt it nearly as bad because you lost something you didn't know you had, but you don't at two or how old she was. But that part, like I said, that part effed me up too, guys. Like I said, it was tough to watch. I don't know about you. I was hoping it was going to be a more of a two episode type thing just
because,
and do more, not on the accident per se, but more, I know you can't, these wrestlers have been told, you ain't getting a check from WWE if you're talking with anybody. So if you're talking on this show, you're not getting a check from us no more. But there's a lot of guys that were involved with this that I can't believe is still going to be drawing a check that wouldn't talk on camera about this. And I was just wishing there was more kind of what happened backstage, because we know what happened. I can describe everything that happened out there in the arena, and I can remember that, but I don't know what, I don't know how the rest of what it was like. Like I said, I don't want to be, it ain't like you're trying to devil in someone's diary or anything, but you're just trying to figure out what's going on, you know, and that's the part I wish they would have kind of touched on a little more, and then touched a little more on his wife.
Battle. Well, you see, I think maybe, I mean, this could happen in the future. They did film a hell of a lot more than they were able to show based on having to meet the criteria of the time for the Vice network. There's a part, and this is probably unknown to so many people, but there's a part that they left out where they talked about there was actually supposed to be two people coming from the rafters that night, and Max Mini was apparently supposed to be strapped, who was, I mean, what's the politically correct word for what Jim Cornette would call a midget?
And a very small
person. Max Mini, he was supposed to be strapped to Owen. It could have been two fatal injuries. Well,
and he said during the Owen didn't want no part of this. You know, you can go back and watch some of these things. He stayed away as long as he could until they made him get to the place and they tested it. And when Max saw that, he's like, no thanks. I don't make near enough to, and if you want to fire me, that's all good in the hood, but I'm not going, and Owen probably even told him, look, just tell him no and they'll back out of it. I mean, I can see Owen telling Max, hey man, if you don't feel comfortable with him, just watch this thing and say, hey, no, and I'll cover for you. It'll be fine. But yeah, I mean, it was such an insignificant part of the show, guys. Such a blop that shouldn't even, I mean, the entrance, it didn't even have to be that, man. It wasn't anything. And it turns out to be the most significant thing that's ever happened in pro wrestling, man, ever. I mean, people have died in the ring before, but not died getting to the ring on an entrance, on a gimmick, on a thing. And you know as well as I do, they were just looking for things to do with Owen. At that point, they're sticking him back in a mask and stuff, and his brother had left, and that whole thing was kind of going on. So I don't know, man. If it was up, looking back at it now, man, it's sad that he was even involved still with that kind of, because, man, WWE was a weird place back then, man. That Attitude Era was it was just a different time, man. I can't describe how. I mean, it was really cool when you were there.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you were young, and I could see a parents looking at going, holy crap, there's no way I'm taking my kid. Because some of the gimmicks were just off the – just terrible. But some of the matches were great, man. That's the thing that people don't realize. There were lots of crazy gimmicks. But, man, with Triple H and all these guys, man, they were great matches back then, and that's what we were all there for that night, man. There were some great matches on that card.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, that pay-per-view will always be kind of shadowed with that now. What were you going to say, J-Mac?
It seems to be that it kind of evolved from being just about wrestling matches to being a complete circus. It was a whole thing, and it was just trying to get more crazy.
It was insane. Like, I can't describe them. The fireworks you see now are nothing like the fireworks they were shooting off back inside in the day.
Just for the intro, the Raw.
Just hurt because their intro for Raw is War. Was just the explode. I mean, I took my friend who wasn't the only time he watched it was when I made him watch it and stuff, but he knew who guys were, man. I mean, he wasn't like, you know, and I mean, he knew who guys were, but I've drug into it and he turned, we'd been to hundreds of concerts together, man, and he turned to me and he was holding his chest after those explosions for the intro to Raw's War, and he said, what in the hell was that? And I said, dude, it's going to be all night long. You know, the Monday night Raw shows, I went to three of them, two in Kansas City and one in Oklahoma City, and those were great shows, man, Raw's War shows. It was so over the top, man. And it was, I mean, Mick Foley, I mean, you know, it was just nutty time, man. It was a great wrestling time. A lot of people hated it because my dad, traditionalist, man, he liked the wrestling stuff, but there wasn't a lot really. The action was stuff kind of going on around the ring. I like the matches. I like the build up around it. The problem with wrestling today, guys, is you've got one guy trying to, he's writing all the stories, or a guy that wants to, and people that are trying to think like the one guy that writes all these stories, and the input's not coming from wrestlers, and they're not coming from the guys like, I don't know, I mean, you know, Cornette is what he is, and those kind of guys they are, but you need more input so that when you have a big pot like that stir together, you can pull out the best parts and go, no, this would work better. And it's just wrestling is just not what it was, man, and I don't think it ever will be. And you may say this, you know, after Owen's death, man, it changed how everything kind of was looked at, man. Everything, you know how it is now. The world's in a different place right now. We've changed because of what's going on right now in the world and because of a significant thing that happened. I mean, and that's what happened in wrestling. This was a significant event in the world of professional wrestling and in sports entertainment, period. Whether it be Circus Dole that comes into town, all this, you know as well as I do, all of them have been told about this. They've read about this. Anybody that's involved with any kind of rigging, any type of harnessing, this story is known to them. Yeah, they know it. You know that they know that.
Instructional videos.
Exactly, and to know that, that's the kind of thing that I put the blame on Vince. I mean, you hire the best guys, man. Why would you hire Joe Blow from whatever? Why don't you call the guy that runs the circus or the guy that runs Barnum and Bailey? Why don't you hire the guy that do scaffolding for cranes or something? This is a person, man. I mean, whatever it takes to have them hooked on and get down safely. I'm all for a cool intro or gimmick or something, man. I mean, we all love Mick Foley being... He didn't get thrown off. He jumped off and landed off of that cage. We all love that, man, because he walked away. How different would we have been if he would have been impaled by something and died right there in front of everybody? I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying. This sport, it's a sport, but, man, to die coming into an entrance, that's the tragic part.
They seem to blur the line between a human being and a commodity. And it's not fair. It's not right. It's actually good that stuff really can't happen anymore.
I'm like you. I'm glad it can't. And I honestly, like you said, if this was to happen in today, imagine, you know, Facebook Live, and Periscope Live, and all these things are live. People are streaming. As many as can get up on their equipment inside a building like that. But that stuff would have been live, man. And
yeah.
It wouldn't have been the fall. You probably wouldn't have saw it. It was dark and people were watching the screen, but the whole aftermath happened after it would have been on record to where there'd have been so many more people telling my story or showing you my story. And like I said, man, I know I'm forgetting a ton of stuff that happened that night. I can remember the wrestlers, all of them coming out, and the four, you know, Val Venus, Stone Cold, The Rock, The Undertaker is still always in character, and Triple H, they didn't break character, which was how, and here's the kind of, you kind of look back, they were separated. Those were the big stars. They're off in their own. They got word to them. Obviously they knew what had happened, but they wasn't there during all the commotion. Hell, they may not even been in the building yet. Some of those guys don't show up until later. You know, they were there and they leave and they come back. Those guys, they put on a professional show, and I want people to understand that was what those guys did that came out and performed after that event. To have to come out after they knew. We didn't know. People at home knew, but those wrestlers damn well knew, and they still put on the show, and I don't think it was because they were scared of Vince or not getting a contract. I think it was just, damn, man, what else are we going to – we're here, we're doing this, this is what was going on, let's just get going. But then the four main eventers were out there to entertain. And I think they kind of knew, like, look, man, let's try to get a pop. Let's see if we can get the up and to make people forget, like you said, a therapy type thing. Not, you know, but let's get this thing up and going again. And when Stone Cold hit, guys, it was loud as any Raw I'd been to. It wasn't any different, you know. Like I said, man, things didn't change until I got back in my car. And I called my wife at another payphone at a gas station and said, what's going on? There's CNNs outside. There's news trucks outside. And she said, yeah, I think he died. And I was like, you know, they never told us. Wow. My wife kind of told me, and that was how I kind of got the information, you know.
Going back to the fact that obviously the not the little guys, but the lesser known wrestlers at the time, they yeah. came out and wrestled straight away. But that's the only job in the world where that kind of thing would happen. Could you imagine working in an office building and then one of your colleagues throws himself off the roof or falls off the roof and you're expected to go back to work unless you work for Apple?
Yes, that might. I work in a racing industry. We do professional races. These guys are racing cars, and these people die in these cars every day. I mean, this happens. We lost a lot of race car drivers the last couple of years in the racing that we cover. It's the most extreme racing and has less safety things just because everything that's built into it can be. It's, you know, motocross racing on a motorcycle is what it is. You can only have so amount of safety gear, but you're still on a motorcycle. So whatever happens, happens, right? I mean, so like I said, other from what we cover, we've been at an event where a person has died. You know, I've covered an event where a race car driver has died and they stopped the race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were pay-per-view going on. It's a different type of pay-per-view than like what Vince has. It's a more of a pay-per streaming thing. You pay monthly service to a company like ours and you can get all of our videos or whatever. But it wasn't one of our races, but it was a major racer, you know, and when he died, it stopped, man. They didn't keep racing. Yeah. Everybody knew he died. You know, they announced it, you know, hey, he hadn't died yet, but he's being taken to the place. So yeah, man, other than wrestling, I can't imagine any, you know, like I said, my business, even if I can't imagine those wrestlers, some of the undercard guys and some of those guys that had to go out there and perform on, you know, you look at some of those names on that match, D'Lo Brown, Mark Henry, you had Hardcore Holly and Al Snow.
That's right.
Al Snow is a veteran, obviously.
Yeah, I've met Al Snow. He's such a nice guy.
Yeah, and you know, so I mean, he was obviously, but that's what I think is strange. Like, we didn't hear from it. We didn't hear from those are the guys you didn't hear from. And I just don't know, is that who still gets drawn checks from Vince somehow? I don't know how that works, but
see, that's who I don't like. Someone we did hear from for the first time in the Dark Side of the Ring episode was Martha Hart, obviously owed Cena his children. And this kind of brings us to the point that is still out there in wrestling. People like the WWE Universe and most wrestling fans would love to see Owen Hart in the Hall of Fame. But now that we see Martha and Owen's children's point of view, do you think maybe the wrestling audience now will kind of calm down with the pitchforks towards Martha now that we've seen that you know, it's all about perspective?
Yeah, I agree, man. After seeing that, and you know, she's well educated, well thought out, well, she understands, you know, she's not a person, you know, you didn't know some of these wrestling wise, you just don't know, you know, sometimes people are. And before the internet, you didn't know that much about it. But after watching that, I see her point of view, and I agree completely. You know, you say it out loud to somebody who doesn't watch wrestling. Just say, you know, this person died in the ring of this, and, you know, his wife's never going to let them benefit or use his name or anything. And they're like, well, of course, why would they, you know? I mean, that makes sense. I understand he had a lifetime there, and the family had a lifetime in that. The WWE, they owe everything, you know, all the money those people nearly have in the bank come from Vince and that company. But when it comes right down to it, man, you ain't gonna, you know, you're not gonna, unless you're destitute, you have no money, you have to do it, you know. I back her 100%. I completely agree. Bruiser Brody, same thing. His family, you know, they just don't want to be involved with this business, you know. They try to stay away from it, you know, and you can see why. I mean, a guy died, had nothing to do with wrestling other than business part of wrestling, you know. I put this tragedy, you know, when I grew up, Bruiser Brody, when he was murdered, we didn't know anything about that. He was my hero, man. I mean, Bruiser Brody, I mean that was the guy. When Bruiser Brody came to town to Kansas City, man, and Andre the Giant would come to town, I mean,
you wouldn't like to shout in Bruiser Brody's face now, because he'd take you out.
And man, Brody, it was such a buzz, man, when he came in the building, man. I mean, it was, and when he died, I remember, you know, when that happened, I just thought, you know, and you didn't know the story of what, you know, it actually happened. And I really hope that they do you know, a little bit better. You know, I know that I can. Did they do an episode with Brody? Yeah, I mean, yeah, I liked it. Like you said, it was a set. That's what I was gonna say. It kind of reminded me of the Martha Hart, you know, Martha thing, is because it was the same deal, man. I can understand why you wouldn't want to be involved with this, and more power to her and her family. I hope. I just wish it was more. They got more money. That's the amount of money they got is pennies on the dollar compared to what, you know, his likeness and everything would have earned him over a lifetime.
18 million, I think they settled.
Yeah. So you're looking at about, what, 12 to 7 by the time you cut your check to your lawyers and taxes and everything. So, you know, it's not like you're not living, you know, they're going to live comfortably because she makes a lot of money and they're going to be fine. And so all that money they made is in the bank and take care. But gosh, guys, man, I just don't understand how you can settle for that. You know, $350 million, that's my number. That's the number I throw out there and say, come on, guys. I mean, you're a billion-dollar company, man. You cut me a check. It ain't got to all be at one time. I'll take three. You know, that can be paid over installments. But that number, that's a measly number, man. That's a, you know, that's a shocking number.
I don't know if Kevin told you this when you guys were talking before you came on, but I've never been a wrestling fan.
Oh wow, yeah.
This is all a completely new world to me that Kevin's kind of opened up. Now, I'm still not a fan as such. I think I'm kind of past that point where, yeah. I mean, I'm 35 years old. I don't think I can like it now. I think I'm past it, but what I do have for it is a massive respect for what it is, and a huge respect for what these guys are actually capable of. Yeah. And watching some of the clips of Owen in that show, that the stuff he could do as a big guy was phenomenal. I mean, that little thing that he did where he was standing in the middle of the ropes and he bounced onto the back of his legs and done a backflip off the ropes. I was like, That's not right.
Yeah. And like you said, it's a more gymnast type of movement. You know, these guys are, and like I said, man, it's tough. Like if you get into wrestling as a real youngster, you're going to be in, even if you don't like it. If it pops on when you're an old man and you're sick of it, 60, 70, you'll still just watch it for a second just to see what it's like, because you grew up with it. If I've got some friends that came along with it later that I drug in later. And like I said, they respected everything because they, you know, when you explain it to them or you show them or you watch it up close like that, man, you get a different respect. Like I said, we all know it's all gimmick stuff and everything's just crazy and stuff. But man, the amount of risk that's involved, you know, with what they do, what went on with Owen didn't need to happen. They already have enough risk, man, with what they do as it is. You know, wrestling every day, these guys can break. Stone Cold, a few years later, breaks his neck. I mean, a few years earlier, had his neck broken by Owen Hart.
That's right.
Owen broke his neck. So, with a pile driver, he broke Stone Cold's neck. Mm-hmm. Could have paralyzed him. He was paralyzed in the ring for a good couple seconds. Couldn't move his feet or anything. The referee, you watched that match.
Still finished the match.
finished the match. And he can't feel his feet. One leg won't move. The referee's holding him up and he's dragging a foot. Come to find out, he's actually broke his freaking neck, and Owen had done, you know, that was Owen, you know, if you remember that, and Owen apologized, you know, went out, you know, that was a major deal. That took Stone Cold from being the guy that was going to definitely oversee Hulk Hogan or anybody ever, and it put a notch in it thinking maybe he might not be able to do it because he had bad knees already, and now he has a broken neck. And you remember when he came back after the broken neck and finished that, he didn't do the move that he did before.
Well, he then broke Sylvester Stallone's back a few years later as well, just for added fun when they were filming the Expendables. My back's broken, yours could be fucking broke.
Yeah, well, I mean, these are real guys, man, and real, you know, but man, like I said, Stone Cold, I can't tell me how many times I saw Ric Flair, Lex Luger fight at an arena in town called Municipal Auditorium. That was like the middle. Kemper was the big one. Municipal was the next size smaller, and then Memorial Hall was the littlest one. And Ric Flair, when he would come to town, you got out to the arena like at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, if you could, man, because you knew when he rolled in, man, because he was driving a different car. You know, it wasn't always a limousine. It was a Lincoln or, you know, big town car or something. But he would come out and sign autographs and stuff. WWE was a little different, you know. WCW, a little more hands-on still. You could still kind of get to some of those wrestlers if you knew a guy or something, you know. And WWE was a different type of animal. And, you know, when it came to Kansas City and started spreading wide with that, like I'll say it, man, the Attitude Era, man, if it wasn't for the Attitude Era, I don't think WWE would still be actually doing what they're doing right now. I think they might have fallen off.
Yeah. They never would have won the Monday Night Wars.
This is actually a question on Monday Night. I happened to just watch a little bit of Monday Night Raw. Jesus, that's not what it's called. Kevin, yes. Is it Monday Night Raw? Right.
Yeah, okay. that's what it's Monday called. Night. Yeah.
It's all good, man. Sorry, guys.
I was watching a different name, did you?
So I was watching somebody last week? And there was no crowd, obviously, the COVID situation. Yeah, yeah. Have you been watching this? What do you think of it? How do you see that?
Well, here's where I don't remember if you guys remember the Super Bowl here in the United States. They had a halftime show with Mick Foley versus The Rock in an empty arena.
I remember that, yeah.
And it was halftime. So instead of you flipping, watching the halftime show, you flipped the channel to USA Network or whatever it was, and they had this, and it was an empty, complete empty arena.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they aren't taking advantage of what they've got with them right now. What they're doing, them and AEW both, what they're doing is ridiculous. As far as you have an empty arena, let's use it. Let's stage things like you've never seen before, because you don't have to fool the people in the crowd.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're only fooling the keep. Why do you think David Blaine and all these magicians all these years go good on TV, but they're live shows run out after a few gimmicks because that's all they got, man. So yeah, you're only fooling half the crowd. And if you don't have to show them, so why are they not taking advantage of these empty arenas to really turn this thing up to something? Man, hire the best guys in film and stage and bring these guys in, and you would blow out, you'd win ratings like crazy. Because what was cool about back in the day was Stone Cold would be at a grocery store kicking the crap out of Booker T. Go watch that video. I mean, I know you probably didn't, you haven't seen that, my man, but wrestling fan, that match alone, him dragging him through a grocery store, beating him with every piece of food in the grocery store, and checking him out through the aisle, that's one of the greatest matches.
Checking him out.
You can have that same type of thing in these empty arenas, man. Yeah. So that's why, I mean, I like it, but what it's showing you is these guys aren't characters. They're not very good at what they're doing. They're more meathead type of individuals that don't. Either that or Vince is completely blocking them on character development as far as what they can say, and completely scripted. Here's your script, memorize it, go out there. And that's why they look like they do, because they're not able to off the top of their head. You think Ric Flair was handed a script? You think The Rock was handed a script or Stone Cold? No, those guys, that was off the top of their head. And these guys, it's lacking what's going on. You know, Jericho's blowing up over there. He's got it's a goofy thing what's going on, but he knows how to work a camera, man. And that's what's missing in wrestling right now. And that's what I feel bad for people that are just getting into wrestling now, man. You got, like you always say, back in the day, man, but you really missed the 80s spawned something crazy, and it was called era, man. And that era, it will go down as a era in wrestling that you can't live up. I mean, ECW was the closest thing that you could, like, if you were watching Attitude Era back in the day, the only thing that was more violent and more crazy was to get a hand on an ECW tape. Mm-hmm. Because wasn't on TV. You could get pay-per-view, but they were filmed out of Philadelphia at this little arena that Paulie owned. and ran it out, and they put on the crazy, I mean, things that guys like us went, oh my God, I can't believe I just saw that. And then a few weeks later, you start seeing it trickle into WWF at the time. Yeah,
I only maybe a few months ago, I saw the back, was it the Backstreet Brawl or back,
yeah,
whatever it was, with Goldust and Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
And I was watching it going, that's not fucking fake.
No, they're laying some blows in, man.
Yeah, they were just kicking the shit out of each other.
And if I was a guy trying to make it in this business right now, I'd get with the other guy that's trying to make it in this business, and I'd tell him, look, man, we could put on a real good show, and we'll heal up in a couple of days. And let's lay some shots in. I mean, you ain't got to break a guy's neck, but you can lay some shots in. You know as well as I do, man, they can make them a little stiffer shots. Go watch a tape of the Road Warriors or Bruiser Brody, my guy. You can watch those. When he wants to stiff shot, dude, those are stiff shots. And, yeah, man, he'll apologize when you're in the locker room afterwards. Nobody's going to get really hurt. You're going to get hurt. You might bust a lip and lose a tooth, something like that. But if you did something like that now on with the way people are starving with what's on TV right now, I can't imagine that your character couldn't get over if you had put on a really, you know. But I think Vince and all these people, they just kind of limit on how much time you get. And each type of wrestler has to have a certain amount of time on TV. I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard they've even talked about each gender has to have a certain time limit on screen. Each person that's in that, you know, ethnicity has to have, make sure that they're getting, you know, and I got no problem. If you're good, you're good. Just show me something good. I just want to see good matches, guys. I don't, you know, I just want to watch something good. And like I said, I'm not quite as entertained as what I'm seeing now. I'll watch a little bit of it, but I'll fast forward that way faster than I would have back when I fast forward through a VHS tape, you know, in the day. I'd sit and watch those. I mean, else you would watch 2 hours of Raw and go back and watch your 3 hours of Monday Nitro that was taped. So that's 5 hours of wrestling in one night, you know. But it, guess what? There was crazy stuff happening. And now it's all under one roof, right? And luckily, AEW is kind of here, you know, helping a little bit. And you have a couple other little ones, you know, that are getting on TV. But I'm like you, man. It's just not, it's not quite really what it was. And I don't think it can ever really be that, just because of things can go bad, man. And another thing, insurance, man, it's a different world than we live in. I mean, they didn't give guys insurance back then. And you could pay a doctor to be on staff to treat everything up into a broken bone, you know. And nowadays, man, you go to a hospital. I mean, that'll set back, set somebody back a lifetime, man, to pay for doctor bills and stuff. So it's a different world, you know, in the United States than when you have doctor bills like that. So it's just a different world. You know, these guys are paying insurance premiums like out, you know, can't imagine how much it costs to have insurance and be a professional wrestler.
We've got socialized medicine here. So
yeah,
it's
I'm coming
I,
over.
I can't. Yeah, come over on vacation, man. Break your leg, we'll fucking fix it for you. It's fine.
I'm telling you, man. I'll set up shop. My son's he's a freshman in high school. He's only got 4 more years of high school, and then he'll be off. I'm ready to find a new place to roll off to, man. I'm telling you.
Well, I can highly recommend Scotland.
I looked it up. I had my daughter look up pretty much right where you guys are at. I was pretty surprised that it was up where exactly it was. I was thinking more a little central, but then I was like, oh wow, we're way up here, man. That's,
well, we wish we were central, man, because being right in the middle of the world, get some good weather. The weather here is shit. This is a great country, and every country is great. You know, if you live in the country, it's great.
And like I said, we love it. We love it here in America. It's just some of us just don't agree with kind of what's going on, you know, and I hate that people kind of look at America right now like, man, what the hell's going on over there? You know, it's just crazy what's going on, but it's still America, man. As soon as we get up and rolling again, man, the wrestling is going, and we like it. Like I said, you guys said did you guys have any questions from the guys that anybody did they?
Well, put a couple questions, the questions that came in were basically questions we were technically going to ask you anyway. We got one from Dave Martin, basically asked, you know, when that happened, what was the general feeling around the people around you? And we kind of touched upon that. And you'd said obviously that there was a guy with his kids. Was there any other standout?
I remember. Here's another thing. I remember, it was so quiet, right? Like the place had been so loud, right? I mean, everything was so loud. The entry, the music, interviews that's being blasted over the thing, everything, and lights. You know, you're being hit with everything, right? And then it was just so quiet. For so long, like it was really like you could hear a lot. Like, go back and listen to tape now, you can hear people hooting, hollering, you know. But it was, compared to what it was, just deathly quiet, and you could just hear it. And I remember some of the people that, like I said, I remember people that were working there, but I do remember people that were selling concessions walking around. They would, everybody just stop. You know, nobody was kind of doing their job, nor they were all, everybody was just fixed on the car crash, you know, because that's what it basically was. You know, it's something terrible just happened, and whether you had a job selling cotton candy or whatever it was, everybody just kind of stopped and was focused on. And even, you know, I can remember there was a few drunk people that were kind of, you know, loud mouthing, but even they got quiet, you know. When so, it, like I said, to answer your question, it really hit hard over the place and around. But I remember everybody's face just had that weird, there was a lot of people that didn't understand, that were just like, oh, I don't know, this part of the show, I don't know, I don't even watch this stuff, you know, I'm here with my kids. And some that were just thinking that it was, that, you know how it is now, some people still buy into everything. So some people believe that it was all real, you know, and that they'd done, you know, and some people were like, something's wrong, you know, like, and that's kind of where I fell on the side of thing, like, I think something's wrong just by being that close. I'd been to a couple other events on the floor. It's best to be in the first little set of seats and the angles just for sight wise, unless you can get in the first three rows, you know. Tickets for pay-per-views are just outrageous. Heck, I think I paid nearly $300, and that's why I tell everybody, this is 1999. I paid $300 and I went and saw somebody die. You know, I mean, that's it's one of those strange events where you just like, really big build up to it, and everything was super pumped about it, you know, and then it just crashed down.
We have another question as well from Todd Forrest, who basically is quoting the Jim Cornette had said on the Dark Side of the Ring that when Owen was fallen, people said they could hear him shout, "Look out." Did you hear any of that?
Yeah, I even told my daughter about that too. That's what was weird, since the video was, they're playing a, everybody was so quiet in the crowd since they were talking on the screen. So everybody wanted to be able to hear what you're. And I remember and now after hearing that, because I've never heard nobody else say that. In my mind, I had heard that somebody yell, and I heard something. I never put two and two together until I heard him say that. And then I watched another video saying that the referee had heard the same thing. And he could hear, and what I honestly heard, thought it was him yelling out of the way or get out, or, but like I said, I couldn't tell you what the words were now, but I heard something, somebody yelling something. And then, like I said, that crazy boom, you know, it was loud. Something was yelled. And when that had happened, I thought, man, I think I heard something, but you don't put that in your mind. And then after watching that Cornette, and that jives with what I remember too, you know, being that close.
God, so I mean, 20 years, I mean, it's 20 years now since that happened. As looking back on it, do you feel that it kind of affected your life in any way, or did you feel that, you know, it was something you've seen? I mean, you watched a man die right in front of you, not just a man, but Owen Hart, you know, Owen Hart from the most prestigious family in wrestling, the Hart family. You watched Owen Hart die right in front of you, and I mean, that's not something everybody can say, and it's obviously, I mean, no one wants to be in that position, but you know, you were there, you were in the third row, you can literally see you in the images as you sent across that you can find on our social media. You were there, and it's not that this is one of those scenarios that even in another 20 years' time, this will always be remembered throughout the history of wrestling. This will be remembered. And you were sat there in the third row, and it's what, taken 20 years for you to actually speak publicly on it. I mean, that's just, I mean, How does that sit for you? I mean, for me, it's like saying, you know, you were there when President Kennedy got shot.
Yeah.
You were there when the moon landed, you know, you watched the rocket take off. You were there when Owen Hart, you know, had his tragedy. And as much, of course, it's not nothing to glorify. It's one of those things that everybody must remember in regards to moving forward and being safe in that business. And you know, sadly, it's become one of those things where you mention Owen Hart and it's right next to him. And it kind of shadows over the career that he was an unbelievable worker. He was a pioneer ahead of his time. And you know, you were there for his last moments, not only in wrestling, but in life. I mean, you must carry some sort of yeah. weight on your shoulders with that.
Yeah, I do. I tell you, as I drive to work, I work part-time, but I work full-time, but I drive to a studio and work. And I drive by that Kemper Arena, and it's to my right, it's a 10-minute drive from my house, right from where I sit right now. I could be there in 10 minutes, and it's right on the side of the highway. You can see it from the highway. So every Saturday when I'm on my way to work, or every Wednesday when I go, that's what I remember. Not all the great concerts and all the, you know, everything, you know, I have to kind of physically, mentally go back into my record book and remember the first image, and unfortunately, that comes up in my computer bank, you know, when you say Kemper Arena or you see that building, that's the first image that pops up. Now, slowly over a few years, you know, other things, and I remember right afterwards. But no, driving by that and seeing that, man, that's the first thing you remember, man. You see that, and that pops in your head every time, man. And yeah, man, it affected me a long time. My wife said I was probably in shock for many, many weeks and many months. Still didn't talk right, you know. And like I said, it wasn't something like I was just sitting in my room freaking out. It was just one of those things, like you were a little off for a while and didn't understand that why you were, you know, off for a little while. And then you like, oh yeah, yeah, I saw that. And that's when you kind of put it all together.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, I've got one more question for you.
Yeah.
This is just from me. you were there that night, obviously. We've been speaking about it for a while. Do you wish that you weren't there that night, or do you think it's helped shape you as to become the person that you are?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. It did. It really did shape who I am. I at first there for a long time, you say now, I wish I had never seen that, you know, never been. But like I said before, my wife was 7 months pregnant, 8 months pregnant with our first child, you know, when I saw this. I have to think it had some effect on me as far as knowing how quick life can be snuffed out. You know, I hadn't really experienced any death really in the family at that point. I had one grandparent at that point pass away when I was a very young kid, but I still had my mom and both all my other grandparents and stuff. So I hadn't really experienced death. I'd lost a girlfriend in high school that was, you know, a friend of ours in high school, but nothing, you know. So yeah, man, I think that, like, you know, may affected the whole, you know, how I kind of looked at things, how, you know, this is crazy, man. This guy, you know, like, we were all just here doing this and that. So I think I didn't, like, go out and say, man, you hear people say, man, I'm changing the way, and that wasn't, man. I went right back to my unloading trucks at work the next night on Sunday night at work, and went right back to work. But subconsciously, man, yeah, it effed me up for a long time, man. You know, my wife talked about it for a while, that, you know, it change it. But I don't think it I wouldn't saying it now. I mean, now I don't hate to I mean, if I could trade, I'd probably say yeah, I probably wouldn't want to have been there, man, because that was effed up. But knowing that, you know, history that happened there, and that maybe somebody will know a little bit more about it, maybe can pass on a little bit of knowledge on them. Like I said, I mean, I'm not even in the business of that kind of stuff, man, but maybe someday somebody will say, hey, yeah, I remember this, and somebody else will talk. And that's the only reason why I just, man, Kansas City is such a big wrestling town, man. Look it up, guys. Just look some history up on Kansas City. And we were we had a black eye on our city for a long time after that event. You know, you couldn't mention Kansas City in wrestling without thinking that, you know. So
yeah,
that's the first thing you think of when people would say, and I'm sure every wrestler thought the same thing. I don't want to go back and wrestle in that effing building again, man. You know,
and, yeah,
they wrestle in a different building now. We have a Sprint Center, a bigger arena here downtown, but I wish I wouldn't have been there to see that, but sitting back 20 years, looking back at this now and knowing the significant role that this, you know, played in history and actually, you know, in entertainment, you know, this wasn't just a wrestling deal. This kind of, when it first broke, you know, this, and there's a few things that changed the way news were kind of ran, man. And this story, if you go back and look at some of the newscasts, man, it got spread pretty quick, man. CNN and Calgary and boom, it was off, you know, and I'm sure it had a whole lot to do. If it had been just an American wrestler, it'd have been more centralized, you know, and it would have been, everybody would have talked about it. But since it was Owen Hart and such a major family, and it was a Canadian type thing, you're involving another, you know, group of people that would have never had a vested interest in that, you know, and he had a whole group of people, man, that were, so yeah, man, it changed the way everything kind of looked after that. Like I said, if you got in the wrestling game after that, I'm sure the stories were all completely different than pre-Owen than post-Owen. Things are different now, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Todd, thank you very much for coming on the show and giving us your insight. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people listening to this that have never heard an audience member's, you know, take on it, view on it. And we would urge anybody else that was there that night to maybe even reach out and speak to you, and maybe, you know, you could maybe chat after all these years and kind of trade, you know, what you kind of guys saw. I mean, it might be quite therapeutic. But you also have a radio show yourself, if you just want to plug your social media and your radio show.
Yeah, man, I'm a producer for a radio show here in town. We're all here in Kansas City, and so we do a show. It's called Racing Boys, RACINBOYS. It's just racing and some boys that watch racing. So racingboys.com. And we cover, we do a weekly radio show for 2 hours. And we're on social media on Facebook and Periscope and on our own website there. And on the radio here in Kansas City, which goes out to about 7 different states here in the Midwest. So it's a pretty big show. And we talk racing every week, man. We just, I'm the producer. I'm the guy answering the calls, pushing the buttons. And it's not just a radio show. It's we do social media. So I've got a switcher. I'm playing video. When we have a guest on, I'm playing video of whatever. So it's a pretty high-end thing for what we're doing. We do, like I said, we do pay-per-view for a race every year, and we're big into that. So, man, like I said, being on this side of the thing, man, it's I look at things a little different, and I respect what you guys do, man. It's
thanks, man.
This podcast, they, man, people just think, oh yeah, you push a button and you go, man, and it's easy, man. People don't realize I had no problem being a little late coming on the show because I had video to edit. I got a show in the morning to do, man, and I'm thinking, I'll just sit here and get my video and my lower thirds all made for the show in the morning, and I have less to do when I go rolling into work in the morning. So yeah, man, like I said, it's all good, brother.
That's brilliant. Thanks very much, Todd. You're welcome back on the show anytime. Especially we have another guest that comes on the show all the time. He's one of my closest friends, and we are huge wrestling fans. And he also is called Todd Forrest.
Oh, cool.
You should come on the show after maybe the next pay-per-view, and maybe we could break down what our thoughts are on the current wrestling product. So I'll definitely reach out to you for that. It'd be two Todds, the J-Mac and Kev, eh?
Okay, I was going to say, can I come?
We'll have it all in. That's all right, man. Anytime you guys want to talk, man, I'm up for it, man. And like I said, I enjoyed, like you said, after you reached out, I kind of checked out some of your stuff, man. It's cool, man. We were checking it out, and keep up all the good work over there, guys. And say hey to mates to all the guys over there, man. I appreciate it.
Perfect. Thanks very much, Todd.
All right.
Thanks.
Here we go. Massive thanks to Todd for coming on the show. I mean, that was a good length of conversation we just had there. And, you know, I would say that I really enjoyed that conversation with Todd. Of course, there's somber moments. And I think, you know, I think I learned a little bit more of what happened that night. And I can almost place myself in his shoes. Well, obviously I can't place myself in his shoes, but I can kind of gather the feeling as to what had happened that day and how you would feel. And you know, it's one of those things. And he brought up something very interesting in there when he said, you know, the lights went on and the show went on, so everybody took a deep breath. Because if you are, like you said as well, if you're in your place of work and someone dies, or you think someone's died, what better way to be like, you know, things are all right than just continuing with the show. So it makes sense now as to why the audience were able to invest back, you know, live vicariously through those characters, Stone Cold Steve Austin, because they didn't think anything was wrong, because well, if something was wrong, surely they would stop the show, right?
Well, you would think so. But I mean, I think what we made clear was that the tension in the room and the feeling in the room didn't really dissipate until the big guys came on, Stone mm-hmm. Cold and The Rock and was it
The Undertaker. Who else? The Undertaker.
I was going to say that.
Mankind.
Mankind. Is Mankind Mick Foley?
Yes.
Remember that question? Remember that question I asked you and you laughed in my fucking face. thanks for that, man. Yeah. So a massive thanks to Todd for coming on the show. Like I said, not a wrestling guy, but I not only have an appreciation for the art of wrestling itself, these guys can tell some fucking stories.
Yeah.
Not even just Todd, I'm talking about the wrestlers themselves. I mean, we've heard it firsthand at some of the conventions we've been there. These guys know how to tell a story. One guy that really knows how to tell a story.
I know what's coming.
Is Marty Jannetty, right? Okay, now, Marty's so good at telling stories that we're going to have a new segment on our upcoming shows, and it's called 3, 2, 1. Fuck's sake, Marty. This guy's social media is beyond... It's unintentionally hilarious, and we're just going to delve into it every single week. So you've got that to look forward to as well. This show seems to be developing a rather wrestling-y theme that I wasn't expecting it to take. So let's see where it goes. But we will talk about movies again at some point.
This is a bonus show.
I know it's a bonus show. But when was the last time we spoke about films? It was fucking ages ago. It was so long ago.
Yeah, we will. We'll do it on the next episode of Jibber Jabber Podcast. Because remember, this is just a bonus show.
Yeah, but I think this bonus show could turn out to be something pretty special. So we might just change the name from Jibber Jabber to The Bonus Show. We'll see what happens.
We'll see. Eh?
This was an absolute cracker. Again, if this is the first time that you're listening to us, thanks for joining us. We hope that you enjoy the conversation that we had with Todd. Please listen to our back catalogue and listen to what we've got coming up. This is a somber episode, but if you listen to the older ones, we will make you laugh. We will make you cry. I made myself cry. Kevin, I think, is made of fucking stone and lint. If you're new to us, welcome, and we hope to speak to you soon on our social media, which you will be following on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
That's right, Jibber and Jabber YouTube. Podcast and YouTube, Jibber Jabber Podcast. Go ahead, like, subscribe, even leave us a review. If you like this episode, please leave us a review. Let us know what you think, and if you've got any suggestions of things you would like to hear from in the future, as J-Mac and myself had said off the when we were not recording this episode. People with stories is fantastic, and anytime we can get speaking to someone with a story like we did with just there with Todd, we're always up for that. So if you've got anything you'd like us to reach out to, anything you would want to hear us talk about, guests, possible guests we could have on, don't always have to be actors and actresses like we have had in the past, just people with some really amazing stories, then reach out to us, leave us a review, let us know, and we'll go ahead and do our best for you. But for this week, we are out of time. So thanks again to Todd. Huge wrestling fan from what I can tell. In the future, we will do some more wrestling episodes with Todd for sure, especially when wrestling starts getting back to, maybe as good as it can be. But as always, my name is Kevin Wells. You can catch me on at Kevin Whatever on Twitter, anywhere else. J-Mac.
And I have been J-Mac. You can catch me at J-Mac Starlaw and Twitter. Twitter? I'm plugging my Twitter!
Do you even know your password? Do you even know your password?
No!
Thanks very much, guys.
Yeah, thank you. And see you next week.